Tonight is about the creation of the shadow self, how to recognize it, and its implications, and how to acknowledge and reconnect with all that we've abandoned over the course of life. So, the human mind is remarkably capable of suppressing threatening, inconvenient, painful, unwanted memories, impulses, even emotions. We can suppress, which means push out, and repress, which means keep out of our conscious awareness, a lot of different experiences that we have. We can push out memories of traumatic events, unwanted separations, physical and sexual abuse. We can push out of awareness impulses that are not well tolerated by those around us, even though they're entirely natural. For example, impulses that don't fit the heteronormative gender expectations of our cultures. People can feel unsafe to manifest those impulses, even though they're perfectly natural, and therefore they can feel great interpersonal and family pressure to push out of their behavior and awareness those impulses. We can push out of awareness even emotions that we have been taught by our caretakers and our social settings that are unsafe to express. In some families, my family, anger was not particularly well modeled or tolerated, so I learned when I felt any kind of disappointment or frustration or anger that I had to get rid of it. So all of the things we suppress become what Jung cleverly called the shadow self or the shadow aspect. It's essentially a repository of unwanted material. Of course, as we'll discuss, it doesn't go away. If it was that easy, I wouldn't really have a talk for you. That would be it. Okay, we get rid of it. That's it. Move on. But, of course, human beings are meant to have impulses, a full range of emotions. We're not meant to, in fact, get rid of and suppress so many of our natural inclinations. So we have what's known as defense mechanisms that deny, distort, that keep this content, these emotions and impulses and memories out of our awareness. They are largely unconscious in that we're not aware that we do these tactics to keep things out of our conscious attention. They go on behind the scenes. The things that most determine what we push out is what's known in psychology as our self schemas. And in essence, the identity stories you've built around yourself to get love and success in the world, you create a story of who you are. And that story of I'm a smart person, clever, successful, creative, witty, this or that, you've created that story not just to really reflect who you are, but reflect a sense of what you think the personality would be like that would be successful for you in the world. So generally the identities we construct are not really natural reflections of ourselves. They're actually creations, masks, personas that are established to get love. The more securely connected we are in childhood, the more the persona we create might inherently match some of the authentic, spontaneous feelings we actually feel. But for many of us who didn't experience secure connection, there'll be a lot of pressure to adapt, change, and what Winnicott called create a false self, where you perform and create new impulses and laugh at jokes you don't find funny and follow teams you don't give a shit about and like bands that are terrible. In my school years, guys were expected to like horrific bands, like Bad Company and Jethro Tull and Foghat. I'm dating myself. Horrific, horrific music. But if you wanted to be invited to smoke pot and hang out with the kids and socialize, you had to pretend that you thought this god-awful music was any good. So the good news for repression, I should say, it's not really good news, but you can repress all kinds of thoughts, language-based ideas, even images from your left hemisphere of your brain, which is voluntary recall. You can push that shit entirely out of your awareness. But guess what? You've got a right hemisphere too. And that right hemisphere is not under your conscious control. In fact, it's got its very own agenda, and it's what stores all of the emotional, physically somatic-based memories of experiences. So you can go through a traumatic experience, an abandonment in early life, and push out of your left hemisphere the entire story of how your dad left your family, or your mom was bipolar, or your brother was narcissistic, or whatever. But the emotional repercussions of that experience will be going absolutely nowhere, and it will remain there like a ghost sitting behind your conscious awareness, waiting for any opportunity to express itself. This is the domain of the shadow self. You can essentially remove the story. And very often, a lot of traumatic experience happens even before we can construct stories. In the first 3.5 years of your life, you don't even have a hippocampus wired up, so you can't wire up any lasting recallable memories, nor can you create a story anyway, because you don't develop the ability to narrate very well until you're about 3. But well before then, your emotional right hemisphere with the cingulate and the anterior cortex and all the structures that can create emotional pain are fired up, ready to go, ready to remember every emotional sensation and to recreate it later on in life. So a lot of our defense mechanisms work in a very simple way. They keep us unaware of the body and unaware of our emotions so that we can feel safer. Let's look at some of them. Busyness, workaholism. It's probably the most socially rewarded defense mechanism in our country. Nobody, but nobody authentically loves their job 60 hours a week, 6 days a week. And I've worked with many, many people over my life, and they'll come in, they'll say, oh, I just love it, I just love it, I just love it. And we say, okay, well, let's just see what happens when you stop doing the job that you love so much. Let's see what happens then. And then we find, in fact, that all that love is, in fact, really largely a reaction to the fact that when people stop and actually become aware of their body and aware of what's going on just beneath the surface of the busyness and the rushing around through life, suddenly all these feelings of anxiety, sadness, loneliness, disconnection, despair, what the fuck is going to happen with me? All that shit is waiting there. No wonder we race around through life. Projection is the ability to feel something, not want it to be in us, so we project it onto other people. For instance, I grew up, as I said, in a family where anger was not particularly well modeled by my alcoholic father, nor in any way tolerated by when I would enact it. So when I feel anger, what I would do is project it onto you and think that you were being threatening to me. It was the only way that I could acknowledge or even open to the possibility of anger and to feel some of its energy, because I would then say I'm defending myself. I wasn't acknowledging that I was truly angry with you. We can develop what's known as reaction formations, which are essentially the ability to change one emotion that feels unsafe to an emotion that feels safer. For example, I work with a lot of people, and very often a very common story goes something like this. One sibling feels safely connected to the parent, and then the parent has a second child 2 or 3 years later. The arrival of the second child feels like a massive threat and upheaval to the first. The first feels suddenly all the connection and attunement with the parent is lost, and it begins to feel a sense of sadness that it's lost the almost, you know, narcissistic connection of early childhood with the parent, because the parent's now paying attention to its sibling, which is far younger and more vulnerable. So the young boy or girl will feel sadness, but the sadness will not be met or noticed by the mother, who is attuned to the child. So the sadness will become just one more emotion to be repressed in exchange for anger or jealousy over the sibling. That feels safer, because jealousy or anger for that, in that situation, feels like the child can do something about it. It can blame the lack of connection to the mother now on its new sibling, rather than feel the actual emotion, which is grief over the lost connection. It's called a reaction formation, and in life we do it all the time. We swap our sadness for anger, or we swap frustration for getting busy, or we swap fear for I can't think of the emotion we might for fear, it's not coming up immediately, but you get the idea, switching one emotional state for another. Finally, of course, probably one of the most common forms of defense mechanisms is intellectualization and humor. And minimizing, all three essentially do the same thing. They change emotional content into thought-based content so we don't have to feel what's going on in the body. For instance, people might make an emotional choice in their life. They might suddenly, out of rage, quit a job. Or out of love, they might suddenly invite their partner to marry them. But then they feel not permitted to acknowledge the emotional presence in the decision. So they'll suddenly start to rationalize it. Of course I asked her to marry me. It makes good sense. We can move in together, save money on rent. Or of course I quit that job. It was, I can now go and do this, and it makes total sense. I can work on my writing. It had nothing to do with the fact that my boss was sadistic and brought up memories of early painful rejections I experienced at the hands of my caretakers. So we will... So anyway, we can replace emotional content felt in the body with intellectual content felt in the mind as stories. Feel safer up there. As Winnicott said, the beginning of the false self always starts with the fleeing of the body towards the safety of the mind. That's again because the mind, we feel, especially the stories of the left hemisphere, what we think about, we feel we have some control over. The body, though, has always felt as a repository for emotions and things that we largely don't feel we have the same control over. It can be inconvenient. The stuff that we repress doesn't become aware of our capabilities as we move through life. So, for example, as I grow older, I might become able to withstand abandonments. I might become able to withstand some of the stuff that as a child I will have found absolutely traumatic. But the stuff that I've pushed into the shadow self will not be aware, nor will I learn how to regulate it. Now, what does this mean? For example, suppose early on in life, in school, I experienced standing up in front of a class and saying something as traumatic. I get laughed at, the other kids make fun of me, I feel unwelcome, I feel unsafe. And so I develop an association of speaking with in public as frightening. And then I might repress that memory and repress any experience of speaking in public, and I might develop a defense mechanism of avoidance, where any time there's any possibility of being asked to speak in public, I will turn it down. That's an avoidance mechanism as a defense practice. But what happens if I successfully keep fear of speaking in front of people at bay for decades, and then suddenly one day I've got a sister, brother, son, or daughter, or a best friend who gets married, and they ask me to make a speech at their wedding? What happens then? Well, I'll tell you, I'm fucked. That's what happens. I will have not learned to regulate that emotion. I will not have learned to talk about it with other people. I will not have learned to express my fear of speaking in public in a useful way. And when I go to speak at that wedding, I will most likely experience what's known as a panic attack, because I have so kept the emotion, the memory, the fears out of my conscious awareness, locked up in the shadow self or the emotional regions of the brain, and I have not allowed myself to learn how to talk about it with other people, that this emotion will still react the way I did when I was in seventh grade and did that report in front of the class. It will not know that I'm now an adult and can withstand a little bit of making a mistake in front of people. I won't be ridiculed. I won't be laughed at. But this emotion doesn't know it, because I've kept it hidden away. So it's unaware of my present capabilities as an adult. Furthermore, because I don't talk about with you these emotions, I don't learn how to regulate it. If, for instance, I repress my anger and I don't know how to talk about it, what will happen is, as I bottle it up, when I finally can't contain it anymore, it'll come exploding out as rage. But if I learn how to talk to you about my feelings of disappointment, my feelings of fear that you will leave me or disappoint me, if I learn how to talk with people about it, then I learn what is just the right amount of attention, emphasis. How do I put into words? How do I express the emotion and gestures? How do I learn to express the emotion in a way that you will be able to understand, tolerate, and respond to? If I don't have that interpersonal practice, if I conceal the emotions, what happens is it will come out in an entirely disproportionate manner. It will come out like a flood. And then what happens is I'll do what's known as acting out and taking back. Acting out is simply acting out, and undoing is where I've repressed an emotion for so long I act it out, and then I rush around trying to say it all wasn't true. It all wasn't true. I didn't mean when I said fuck you. I meant, in fact, you're a good friend of mine. A good example of reaction formation when people hold down emotions and then it comes out is they might feel, for example, desire to quit their job, and they'll hold that down because the idea of going out into financial insecurity and not knowing how they're going to make their next paycheck becomes frightening. It might remind them of an early experience in childhood where their father got downsized or their mother expressed fear about money, so they won't give themselves permission to leave the job. So this job that they hate, feeling that dislike, they'll change it to a completely inappropriate emotion. They'll go to their boss and say, I love working here. I want to work here forever. And then they'll walk away and say to themselves, what the fuck was I just thinking? Holy shit, I hate this job. What the hell is on my mind? So it's really important to become aware of the presence of shadow content when it's trying to make itself known. Now, how do we know that? Well, there are a number of signals. I'm going to give them all to you, and this is probably the absolute meat of the... Well, I don't eat meat, so this is absolutely the tofu, this is the Satan. The Satan of the talk. You don't want to miss the Satan of the talk because it's the closest thing to meat you're going to get here. So, certain cues that you are in the presence of what Freud called signal anxiety, the repressed is trying to make its way back up to conscious awareness. The first is you might well expect to experience anxiety. That is the first sign that something that you've pushed down wants your attention. I worked with a good friend many years ago who was coming out of the closet and owning his feelings of being a gay man, and it was at first for him a very, very anxious experience. He felt anxiety not just about every relationship and impending abandonment by his family, but it also created insomnia, which is another key. So very often, right before the unpermitted makes its way up to consciousness, we might have a bout of anxiety, worry, inability to sleep. People who are stuck in unhappy marriages, unhappy work situations that are made commitments that they don't want to keep, but they feel obligated to, any situation where they feel there's an expectation that they've committed themselves to that they no longer can do, very often the way that awareness of, I can't do this, I know I've signed up for this thing, but I really can't do this, will create anxiety and insomnia. People fantasize to escape unadmittable feelings. For example, parents of children find it very, very difficult at times to acknowledge that not only do they love their child, but their child is a massive fucking demand on their time. And there are times when they wish that they didn't have this huge lingering responsibility and obligation weighing down their lives. But they don't feel the permission to ever say that, because in our society it's considered to be somehow wrong to acknowledge what is a very natural feeling. So instead what they do is they fantasize about the times before they had the child, when they were fancy free and unconnected and before they made that life-changing decision. Some people will regress. Regress means they'll suddenly become incapable, clingy, needy if a fear is arising that they've repressed. Or some people will basically push other people away the moment and essentially hide, like a child hides away from parents when it's disappointed. That's the way some people will deal with anger and disappointment in life. They'll hide and avoid their friends or avoid the person that has caused the discomfort or the disappointment, rather than learning to communicate the emotion. And of course, probably the most common signal that people are experiencing the presence of the arising shadow self is substance abuse, a spike in substance abuse. Now, substance abuse that's ongoing is a form of, it's a maladaptive attempt at emotion regulation. to a large degree. People use drugs to avoid feeling or being aware of certain emotions, but when the unwanted begins to arise, generally an extreme spike in using substances we'll see, because, for instance, somebody who starts drinking around the clock or drinking heavily all the time is using alcohol as an anxiolytic to remove the anxiety of the awareness of the unwanted making its way known. If it's feelings of aggression, heroin is a noted anti-aggressive medication, and very many people who grow up in horrible, dysfunctional environments where there's a lot of abuse learn to regulate. The only way they can regulate their the repressed memories of the abuse is through heroin. So we might expect to see a spike in using dope. People who feel a complete lack, or they don't feel permitted to be happy or joyous or have thrill in life, they will turn to drugs like cocaine, anything that releases dopamine. So any time we're experiencing the reappearance of the repressed, we can expect an even greater reliance on a substance for emotion regulation, because people will not particularly feel safe to seek out somebody who is caring and empathetic and open the most vulnerable experiences of their life unless they're really, really desperate. So what do we do when we recognize the presence of these situations? Suppose something I've just mentioned seems familiar, maybe a time of mounting anxiety or panic or insomnia, regressive tendencies, a tendency to explode with rage and then try to undo it, a tendency to isolate, or a tendency to use and drink more than we usually do. Well, the first thing we need to do is learn how to stop avoiding what needs attention. This means we turn towards the feeling in the body, which is how the shadow self will primarily talk to us, through somatic emotions, feelings of tightness in the chest, in the throat, in the belly, in the shoulders. Turn towards it and give it permission, rather than going up into the head and going up into busyness, into our defense mechanisms, or into our last-ditch efforts to avoid. Relax the exhalation so that you can create a safer container to hold the emotional activations. Observing how the emotions, when they are given permission, begin to move through the body. They don't stay stuck. They will arise in waves of contraction or pain. People have called, in fact, the Buddha referred to repressed emotions in one sutta as the reservoir of discomfort. So none of this feels particularly good. We didn't repress these experiences, these emotions, because they felt joyous. Generally, they feel very uncomfortable when we first repress them. Now, when they arise years later, they will feel even more painful. They will feel even more uncomfortable because they have not been regulated or given permission to express themselves over time. Another key is nurturing the emotions when we feel them. So if I make a contact with the frustration I feel at times with people, rather than immediately switching it over to humor or intellectualization, being philosophical, which is an avoidance strategy, a defense mechanism, I stay with the feeling, which might well be in the arms or in the jaw locked, my anger. And I create a welcoming. It's okay. I'm all right. It's all right. I can feel, hold, be with this emotion. I don't need to get rid of it. You're permitted. You're allowed to be here. I don't need to push you away. You are welcome. And not only that, I'll show you that together we can get through life. This is the most important part, because the emotions that I've been running from will not be aware of my current capabilities as an adult. My repressed emotions will want me to act out in a completely unbalanced, over-the-top way, because it wants me to react the way it felt when I was a child about to die. It doesn't want me to react in a proportionate way to what's actually going on today. So if I feel somebody's been wounding in a comment, when I experienced that as a child, it might feel like my life was in danger. Today, it's just schmuck giving me a hard time. So I can feel the anger, say hello to it, reassure it we'll be okay, I'll take care of it, and then just say, hey, schmuck. Now, I'll say, hey, you know, when you say that, this is what I feel. I feel a great deal of anger in my body, and I feel like I want to grab you by your ears and scream in your face, don't ever say that shit again. I'm not going to do it, but that's what I feel. And that is a way I learned to regulate my anger, by talking about it, feeling, talking about it, not acting it out, not repressing it, holding it, creating a safe container. So, last two points. When we do this work, we have to know when to move in and stay with the emotion, but we also have to know when it's too much and when to pull back and to do another practice. Focus on the breath, focus the mind somewhere else, think of a relationship that's going well, do something that moves away from paying attention to the emotion, let it cool down, and then bring back. This is a practice of observing, giving space, nurturing, but then pulling away, pulling back, giving it some space, letting the emotion cool down for a little while, then going back in. It's very important not to stay in when it becomes so overwhelming that all we're doing is creating a feedback loop of misery. So you'll know when that happens, when you feel that you don't have any more safe container that can hold the emotion in the body, that's when we pull back, okay? Now the second thing that's very useful is self-soothing strategies. Self-soothing strategies are ways we can make the experience of holding an old memory, emotion, or impulse that feels dangerous, we can make it easier. How do we do that? Well, we choose a setting that feels safer, that feels more calming, more tranquil. One of my favorite stories, I know I use this one a lot, but I worked with somebody years ago who had experienced a particularly traumatic loss, death, family, and could not feel the loss, which they had repressed for quite a while, could not safely feel it at home, because at home felt too much like being in their own brain. There wasn't enough space to hold it. It wasn't a safe enough container for the emotion. So what he would do is he would go to the beach and lie down on the sand and feel the warmth of the sun, hear the waves, feel the body relaxing, and there he could cry and hold the loss and open to it. It was, what he needed was a slightly safer, more soothing container to open to the emotion. Many people find that they can hold abandonments while sculpting, drawing, knitting, gardening, lying in a warm bath, sitting by the river, getting out of one's apartment, going to a place where there are more sensations to create a buffer between us and the painful content of the shadow self as it arises.